This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. President Obama will visit Hiroshima, Japan, this Friday, making him the first sitting U.S. president to ever visit the site of the first atomic bombing in world history. More than 70 years ago, on August 6, 1945, under President Harry Truman, the U.S. dropped a nuclear bomb on Hiroshima and obliterated 100,000 lives. 3 days later, the U.S. bombed Nagasaki. The bombings were deemed necessary to ending World War II. Well, what does President Obama's trip all these years later really signify? My guest is Dustin Wright. He teaches Japanese and Pacific history at the University of California, Santa Cruz. He just published an article in the Japan Times entitled, "Let Obama's Hiroshima Visit Open Up Debate in the U.S. About the Nuclear Attacks." Welcome to the show, Dustin.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, before we talk about what's the debate that should happen in the U.S., I'm wondering if you can share with me how Obama's visit is being received in Japan itself. I mean, I understand that there's widespread support from the Japanese to have President Obama visit Hiroshima. He's visited Japan before, and I understand Secretary of State John Kerry became the highest sitting U.S. official to visit Hiroshima last year, but no sitting U.S. president has ever visited Hiroshima.
That's right. Yeah. So it really is a very historically significant event that that a sitting president is going there. I mean, other presidents, once out of office, gone through. I think Jimmy Carter went there. But really, to have a sitting president go there, I think is being received very positively in Japan by a lot of spectrums, a lot of people on the wide political spectrum.
And what did they expect for, for Obama to say? What did they expect for the visit to signify, as far as you can tell?
I think that it helps to, one, probably to reiterate the centrality of Hiroshima in the long history of nuclear warfare. And it really elevates that city into becoming a space that has been one that is the main focal point of the anti-nuclear movement, the global anti-nuclear movement. You know, that Hiroshima and Nagasaki, because they were both the only places to suffer a nuclear attack, have really, in the post-war period, taken it upon themselves to become big activist cities and try to push for global disarmament of nuclear weapons. And so having the president go there and acknowledge the history of that city with his presence as a standing president, I think really helps the people in that city who have been part of this this campaign to really elevate themselves.
Let's talk about the history briefly. This is so important. We have convinced ourselves as a country that were it not for the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, far more people would have died, that it was absolutely necessary for there to have been these horrific bombings. Terrible as they were, it was a necessary evil in order to end World War II. What's wrong with this picture?
Part of the problem that I see with that is that when we talk about necessity, it sort of takes away the individual decision-making process out of that. If I say something is necessary, then I don't really have a choice to make in that matter. It sort of takes the responsibility away from me when I say that. So, if we talk about the necessity of dropping the atomic bombs, suddenly we don't really have any sort of intentionality to point to. And I think that's partly what the debate in the U.S. is lacking. You know, we talk about, as you mentioned, the numbers of people who would have died. And when they dropped the bombs initially, there wasn't too much of a talk about numbers of people who would die. They certainly had an idea of what the invasion of the mainland would look like. And, they were talking maybe tens of thousands of people would die in that. But what was interesting is that in the post-war period, the numbers of people who were estimated to would have died in the invasion grows, so that late in Truman's presidency, you have numbers that are upwards of a million people who would have died, and those numbers increase exponentially over the post-war period. And it's partly because people begin to question you know, the utility in dropping the bombs and whether or not they were really necessary.
And of course, when that history is told, as I'm sure you well know, given what you do, it seems as though a lot of statements are made in the passive voice. Bombs were dropped. Not that the U.S. bombed Hiroshima, I mean, but that's exactly what did happen. How destructive is that passive voice to our collective conscience here in the U.S.?
I think it's important. You know, we know that, you know, words are really important, and the way that we discuss tragedies and significant historical events, it's really important how we think about these things. And as you're saying, right, a lot of the way that the history books that I read in high school, they didn't say that, you know, Americans dropped a bomb. They said a B-29 dropped a bomb on Hiroshima. And a B-29 dropped a bomb on Nagasaki. And what that does is it takes away, you know, people out of that equation. And suddenly it just becomes a discourse that is centered on technology. And that's it. And so that's a real problem, I think. And that kind of gets back to what I would like to do is really think about that there are people involved in these decisions. And partly they're making political decisions to drop these bombs. And if you're just talking about an airplane doesn't make a political decision, and a bomb, you know, just doesn't appear out of nowhere. So I think that words are important.
How important is President Obama's visit to the U.S.? We talked about Japan, but can his visit spark a much-needed and much-delayed debate, discussion, dialogue on what the U.S. did, not just on whether nuclear weapons ought to be, you know, ought to become obsolete, whether we should dismantle them, etc., but just simply reckoning with what the U.S. did in 1945?
I think, you know, this is where his visit is important. Anniversaries matter in Hiroshima. You know, every August 6th, there's a major commemoration. That's the day that the bomb was dropped there. Nagasaki has a similar commemoration every year. And these, you know, so these moments are moments in Japan where every year they reflect on the bombs and so forth. But I think that Obama's visit is different in that regard, that it really brings back to the U.S. Our central role in this discussion. It isn't simply the Japanese remembering either their victimization from the bombs or that it is any sort of conversation about, you know, one country. But in fact, that we can think about this as something that happens with American culpability, that Americans dropped this. So we can bring this conversation back to the U.S. And have us think about what we're talking about when we say necessity in dropping these bombs. And you know, we can open up a new discussion here.
What do you think is going through President Obama's mind? I know that this is sort of a dangerous question because you can't read his mind, but in putting his visit to Hiroshima in a broader context, you know, he became the first president to visit Cuba in many decades. He has warmed relations with Iran. He seems to, you know, on some foreign policy fronts, be making inroads that previous presidents seem to not have had the courage to do, setting aside his culpability on plenty of wars and, you know, the very legitimate critiques of him as a warmongering president. But on certain fronts, including Cuba, Iran, and now Hiroshima, is he breaking some important boundaries?
You know, I think that in some ways he is. And, you know, I think specifically with relation to Asia, you know, Obama has been looking pretty strongly towards a sort of, as you mentioned, a kind of a more of a stronger detente with Vietnam, but also...
Right. He was in Vietnam this year, too, and undid a ban on military weapons sales, which... one could argue it may not necessarily be a good thing, but anyway, yes, Vietnam also.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, by his going to Hiroshima, he is very much putting himself into, you know, a very contentious historical moment. And you know, so he's certainly doesn't seem to shy away from making, you know, really addressing things that are central to the American Cold War narrative. And I think, you know, you think about what he's doing with Cuba, what he's the agreement that he was able to foster with Iran. A lot of these things are unraveling Cold War narratives that we in the U.S. have really held on to with a death grip for a long time. But, you know, on the other hand, Obama is also talking about this pivot to Asia. And this has been what is seen as a remilitarization of Asia. And, you know, not thinking so heavily about militarism in the Middle East, but instead posturing more, realigning with allies in Asia to build up a military presence to counter China. And you know, that's been part of his mandates. But for me, as somebody who spends a lot of time thinking about the Pacific and about particularly people who protest against militarism in Asia, you know, I never saw the bases disappear in Asia at all. And that, you know, a heavy military presence, an American military presence in Asia has been one of the constants since, you know, or from the beginning of the 20th century. So this pivot to Asia, I think, is very much more in line with what has been a much longer history of American militarization in that region.
Right, and it doesn't. There's no indication that President Obama will actually move away from that aspect of U.S. policy. However, the right has cast President Obama's visit to Hiroshima and visits to other countries, right, really from the start of his tenure, as him embarking on so-called apology tours. First of all, I'm not sure President Obama is going to apologize for Hiroshima. If he did, of course, it would be symbolically and legally extremely significant. And second, I understand the Japanese aren't even necessarily looking for an apology, are they?
No. I would be more surprised to have, you know, the apocalypse happen than to see Obama apologize. Really, he's a and as you're saying, nobody is really asking for that. There was a poll that I just saw released today in Japan that polled hibakusha, the people who survived atomic attacks in Japan. And 80% of them said that they don't want any apology, or they're not asking for any apology. Nobody expects that. So that's from the people who were most closely victimized by these atomic attacks themselves. And even peace groups who, you know, are the, and Japan has a lot of longstanding peace groups who've been focused on issues of nuclearization. They aren't asking for an apology. You know, the fact that Obama is going there is more than a lot of people would have expected at this point.
However, for those of us who have viewed Hiroshima and Nagasaki as among the most horrifically evil actions ever taken by humans against one another, an apology would be appropriate. An apology is the least that the U.S. can do, right?
I mean, if you think about, you know, how much we've been hearing about North Korea's development of a nuclear weapons program and the ability to develop weapons that can now deliver those nuclear weapons farther and farther away, I think that a message that, you know, that America has been maintaining for a while, that is, you know, nuclear weapons are awful, but you should only use them as a last resort, or, you know, they're only awful until you really need them. And I don't think that's the message that America would want to send to a country like North Korea in their diplomatic relations, right? It's not the right way to do it. And so I think that, yeah, it would be very significant to show that as the president of the only country to ever use nuclear weapons on people, specifically, you know, cities that are mostly civilians, that to apologize, to show some remorse, to recognize that the historical weight that we have as a nation is significant, I think would be a powerful and important step into, you know, overall global disarmament of nuclear weapons. You can't use a weapon and not feel remorseful. You know, we don't get we don't get that luxury.
And it should also be mentioned that the Japanese themselves, because of their history around Hiroshima and Nagasaki, have historically been an intensely anti-war population, and specifically anti-nuclear war population, even anti-nuclear energy population. Despite that, of course, there has been there are nuclear energy plants in Japan, Fukushima being one of the most prominent ones, with the accident there happening. It's raised a lot of fears around the dangers of nuclear technology in general. How do you feel that U.S.-Japan relations within the context of President Obama's visit to Hiroshima might be undermining that drive toward anti-war sentiment? Is it that the history is just fading fast, the memory is fading fast?
I don't know actually that the memory of nuclear weapons or nuclear devastation is fading. The anti-nuke movement that we see in Japan today and the global movement actually doesn't really come about after Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It happens in the 1950s with the testing of American weapons in the Pacific, nuclear weapons in the Pacific, and the radiation and devastation that those nuclear weapons brought to Japan's fishing supplies. There's a famous incident called the Lucky Dragon incident in 1953. In which not only one tuna boat, but hundreds of tuna boats were irradiated by an immense nuclear test at the Bikini Atoll. And that was when people in Japan were free to begin to start a major anti-nuke coalition. You had organizations that were mostly made up of housewives in Japan who were able to gather petitions of millions of people within Japan and millions of people abroad. And even to this day, even with change.org and what we have on social media, it probably was still the biggest petition drive to ever happen globally historically, and it was started by Japanese housewives. And Fukushima, I think, builds into that. So there's a deep tradition about a strong way of philosophy in Japan of thinking about what nuclearism is and how nuclearism. Dispossesses people immensely, and so there's commonalities between Fukushima and Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the Lucky Dragon incident. They all sort of fit in to a narrative.
And so the anti-nuclear and anti-war stance, you think, isn't fading. Well, that's certainly good to hear. Finally, what do you expect will happen on Friday in terms of the moment that's going to be highly photographed? President Obama will be visiting the cenotaph, which is this beautiful memorial that's been built in the heart of Hiroshima, that apparently has the names of every single person who died in that atomic bombing. And it's a very iconic and very symbolic place, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. I mean, it's a 30-acre park in the middle of Hiroshima, which is today a beautiful, vibrant city. And this park is a beautiful park as well. And I've been there on the anniversary days, and it's, I've seen it filled with thousands of people. And just after 8 o'clock, when the bombs fell, the park goes silent and people lay on the ground for a number of minutes. And it's totally silent during that time. Excuse me. So it's very much a place of commemoration and memory. And I imagine that for Obama's visit, it's going to be very solemn. We'll probably see him bowing in front of that memorial, as you say, probably laying some flowers. I imagine it'll be a very quiet, somber occasion.
As it should be. Well, yeah. Dustin, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article in the Japan Times that's called "Let Obama's Hiroshima Visit Open Up Debate in the U.S. About the Nuclear Attacks." Thanks so much, Dustin.
Thank you very much for having me.
My guest is Dustin Wright. He teaches Japanese and Pacific History at the University of California, Santa Cruz. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.